KUT and KUTX listeners, the stream you've connected to is going silent on April 20th. You're likely using an old bookmark, app, or link that's been around a long time. Please visit kut.org/streams. That's kut.org/streams for more information. If you're still hearing this message next time you listen, there's a form at the bottom of that page that you can fill in for help. Our websites, apps, and npr.org are updated, so you can tune in there. Thank you for listening and supporting our stations.
This is KUT.
KUT.
KUT Austin.
Stop.
KUT Austin.
Stop.
This is KUT Weekend for the third weekend of June 2020. Thank you for listening. I'm Nathan Bernier with KUT 90.5, the NPR station in Austin, Texas. Here's what we got for you this week. The city of Austin orders businesses to require face masks.
And it's important to have something mandatory. It's important to have something that has a fine associated with it.
UT Austin's school song has been sung for over a century, but it's rooted in racism.
The song has that, something that people do without necessarily thinking.
And a Texan in her 90s still working to make Juneteenth a national holiday.
I feel like maybe whites are afraid, and we're not a people that you need to be afraid of.
Those stories and more in this edition of KUT Weekend. So yes, I have been gone for a while. Thank you to Jerry Quijano for taking care of this podcast while I was gone. I was busy helping take care of this little lady. This is Nora. She is my first daughter. She is extremely cute. I don't personally recommend having a child during the outbreak of a pandemic if you can avoid it. There are some challenges associated with that. Obviously, that's not something we had a lot of say in or planned to do. But this pandemic is taking its toll. And Austin Mayor Steve Adler issued an order this week requiring Austin businesses to enforce the use of face coverings for employees and customers. Travis and Hayes counties also followed suit. Adler says multiple studies have proven that wearing masks is effective in limiting the spread of the coronavirus. This move came the same day that Austin Travis County saw a record number of new cases. And by the way, the cumulative total in Travis County is now above 5,000. KUT's Nadia Hamdan sat down with Adler and talked about this new order and what it means for local businesses.
This order requires businesses to come up with a plan by Tuesday. That's a kind of a health and safety plan for their businesses. Many businesses have already done this. But the plan has to include an element at a minimum that all employees and visitors to the businesses wear face coverings while on those commercial entities' properties. So it's the first step to us to directly requiring businesses to require their customers, employees to wear masks.
And what type of penalties can businesses expect if they don't comply with the order?
You know, we're going to be working on that between now and early next week. We haven't decided exactly what we're going to do here in Austin. And it's important to have something mandatory. It's important to have something that has a fine associated with it. But, you know, when we did this before, associated with the stay-in-place order, we never had to fine anybody or put anybody in jail. And I don't anticipate we're going to have to do that here. Again, with all these things, virus, we ultimately are dependent on the community wanting this to happen and culturally accepting it and encouraging it. There simply are not enough police officers or code enforcement agents to be everywhere to police this. This has got to be something that together as a community we want to do in order to help preserve the opening of the economy, that we want to do in order to keep people healthy. That's how it gets done.
And why did you decide to put in place this order now?
Well, actually, we've been disappointed ever since the governor stopped us from being able to enforce our rule that made masking mandatory. We have been appealing to the governor to put a statewide mandatory order in place. And a couple of days ago, the mayors of the largest cities in Texas appealed to him that if he wasn't going to do it, to at least give us the local ability to do that in our cities. So we've been trying to get this done. It was the governor at that point that said we needed to find an alternate way to enforce that or make it mandatory. The Bexar County judge came up with this idea of not directing it at individuals, but focusing on businesses, and the governor said that was allowed. So we immediately followed the avenue or path he opened.
So it seems, like you said, the decision to do this in Austin came about because of Bexar County Judge Nelson Wolf's decision that he made on Wednesday. And when he put in place that mandate, Governor Abbott was then prompted to respond to that. And Governor Abbott has said that, you know, Texans cannot face civil or criminal penalties for not wearing face coverings. But after Judge Wolf made that decision, Governor Abbott said it was okay because it was penalizing businesses, not individuals. And then he went on to say that this is something local authorities have always had the power to do, and that Judge Wolf, quote, finally figured that out, end quote. How do you respond to that? Was it clear to local governments that they could issue an order mandating businesses to require face masks?
I think if it had been clear that this was the avenue in order to get this very constructive behavior to be in our community earlier, we would have done it earlier. So it was not apparent to us. But regardless, it's apparent to us now. So we're putting those policies into place.
And Mayor Adler, I'm curious if you think a development like this one might mean mayors can do more? In other words, do you think you can put in place other local measures about COVID-19, like changing capacity rates or issuing stay-at-home orders, kind of similar to the way you did things before the governor started issuing statewide orders?
Well, we're taking a look at that. I mean, obviously, the governor wants us to issue an order that's consistent and doesn't conflict with his. So to the degree that the governor has put a specific occupancy number in his order, I don't think he would look too kindly on us putting in a different occupancy order. Yeah. Or at least he would believe that was conflicting with his plan. But beyond that, I think we're taking a look at the kinds of behaviors that he recommends that people do, and then seeing if we can make those kinds of behaviors mandatory. He recommends wearing masks, so, I mean, it's obviously something that he wants people to do.
Austin Mayor Steve Adler, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you for the invitation to be on.
The Texas Education Agency says students and teachers and staff will be able to return to school safely this fall for in-person instruction. This happened this week. The Education Commissioner of Texas, Mike Morath, said there will be flexibility for families with health concerns so that their children could be educated remotely if the parents so choose. But labor groups are also worried about the safety of employees. Zef Capo is the president of the Teachers Union, Texas AFT.
I mean, it sounds like they're under the misguided conception that August is going to be back to normal as usual. And frankly, I just don't believe that we're in normal times. Educators and parents alike really want to know what they mean by return to school in August. Do they mean like return on a staggered schedule? Do they mean return on a normal schedule?
The Texas Education Agency is saying it will provide more detailed guidance next week on exactly what a return to school will look like. Now, the number of people out of work in the Austin area was down last month compared to April, but the unemployment rate is still near a record high. We got some government data out today. This is from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, but it comes to us from the Texas Workforce Commission. And here's what it said. Now, these are non-seasonally adjusted estimates, if you're keeping track. But the Austin metro area's jobless rate in May, last month, 11.4%. If you compare that to May 2019, we were near a record low, 2.4%. However, the region's economy did add jobs last month. If you compare May to April, the estimates released by the Workforce Commission show almost 40,000 people were hired from one month to the next. But there are still, in the Austin, Round Rock, San Marcos, area. More than 130,000 people looking for work. These are not just people who don't have jobs. These are people who are seeking jobs. So the number of people without jobs is obviously higher. 130,000 people, that's more than four times the number of people who were seeking employment the same time last year. The city of Austin, like a lot of municipalities, has been scrambling over the last few months to get supplies for the COVID-19 pandemic. Hand sanitizer, gloves, but masks, especially those N95 masks, have been hard to find. So KUT's Audrey McGlinchey found records of the city having to cancel contracts because vendors could not deliver and the city had to return lesser quality products. So Audrey spoke about this with KUT's Jennifer Staten.
Audrey, so first of all, you were seeing stories about governments going into deals with less than qualified people to try and find things like masks and gloves and hand sanitizer. What has it been like for cities to find these kinds of products during the pandemic?
So it's been really difficult, just outside of Austin as well. And we've seen governments, and this is federal, state, and local governments, contracting with people who have never provided this kind of equipment to governments before. Powerful business people who say they have the ability to do this and then end up not being able to. The general supply chains that provide this type of personal protective equipment to governments have dried up, obviously, because these things are in extremely high demand. And so cities, including the city of Austin, are having to find other entities, other companies, other people who say that they can provide these kinds of things. And sometimes they can't.
How does the city of Austin normally contract with vendors?
Typically, either the city has an existing open contract with a company that provides it various supplies, or the city will go out and have companies bid. So they'll go out and say, we need XYZ, and companies will submit their bid. And then the city will take sometimes up to months to vet these companies, doing various research on them. Are they local? Are they out of state? But because we're in an emergency right now, that's all changed. The city's awarding non-competitive contracts, meaning there's no competitive process like we typically have. So, but luckily, the city of Austin says it's not paying any money up front for supplies. Some cities have, paid up front for things and then don't get them. And so the city of Austin at least is being careful about that and not spending any money until vendors have delivered. And again, like I said, some of them haven't been able to deliver. So the city of Austin may be wasting time and resources, but at least as far as I was able to find, they haven't been spending money on something that doesn't eventually show up.
And Audrey, during the coronavirus pandemic, we've been hearing a lot about masks and a lot about N95 masks in particular. Why does the city want N95 masks?
So as the city has ramped up testing for COVID-19, it will need more of these masks for healthcare workers and first responders. Late last month, the city actually submitted a COVID-19 testing plan to the federal government. And in that plan, it said by July, the city hoped to have 800 new N95 masks per month, plus about 3,000 other types of masks of lesser quality. And the CDC actually recommends that the healthcare workers wear N95 masks because they have a respirator, they provide more protection.
So what has it been like for the city to try to find N95 masks?
Well, from my reporting, it's been sort of a process of let's kind of throw stuff at the wall and see what sticks. So I'll give you one example that I found compelling, which was that the city of Austin in early May contracted with a company called Wellcore Inc. Now, Wellcore is owned by a guy named Jason Kane. Kane actually made a name for himself in the 80s and 90s when he sold through infomercials workout products. People may have heard of things like Ab Flex or Ab Magic. So Kane had, as he told me when I got a hold of him, had never bought or sold N95 masks before, but the city agreed to award him a contract for $825,000 to get 300,000 N95 masks for the city. And your next question might be, well, did he get them? And the answer is no. The city of Austin actually ended up canceling that contract after several weeks because Kane could not come through.
How did the city come to choose him when he had no experience producing or distributing this very critical healthcare supply?
That's a great question. And the city, when I asked them for what documents they used to vet his ability to provide these kinds of masks, they said there were no documents. But they did send me a statement which said, the city said, quote, WellCor appeared to have the required financial and operational resources to fulfill the order. Again, I don't know what that means because the city said it had no documents that it used to vet Kane. Kane told me that he and people from the city had a couple phone calls prior to the contract being awarded. But that was all I was able to find out about how the city actually vetted this person. And then as we saw, he wasn't able to come through. They had to cancel it a couple of weeks later.
So the city had to cancel the contract. Has the city been able to get the N95 masks that it says it needs?
So according to the records I was able to get, the city did get almost $10,000 worth of N95 masks in early March. And since then, the city's had to cancel at least two contracts for N95 masks. The contract with Kane was not the only contract the city has had to cancel. They canceled another contract for about $1,200 with another company that said that could get them N95 masks. Another company that said they could get the city N95 masks actually ended up giving them KN95 masks, which there's a small difference, but basically that means these masks were certified in China and not the U.S. And the federal government has really some caution about these masks. They say that there's a possibility they're not tested in the same way N95 masks are, and they may not be as reliable. So the city of Austin in that case actually returned those masks. Right now, the city does have an active contract out with a healthcare financing firm in Houston for N95 masks. But I talked to the guy that heads up that company on Tuesday, and he said he has yet to deliver any masks to the city of Austin.
So Audrey, does that mean that Austin Public Health is conducting COVID-19 testing and has been administering more of those tests without N95 masks?
Last told me, I asked this of them back in May, and they said, no, there's no shortage. They said some of the pressure on traditional supply chains for these kinds of equipment has lessened a little bit. And maybe that's because companies have had time to catch up. I'm not entirely sure, but it was a very vague statement from the city, which basically said, no, we don't have a shortage of N95 masks. But again, through my reporting, I haven't been able to find a reliable source that the city's using for these kinds of masks.
KUT's Audrey McGlinchey. Thanks, Audrey.
Coronavirus pandemic is also making it harder to staff polling locations for the upcoming elections. So now, voting groups in Austin are trying to recruit more young people to work the polls. KUT's Ashley Lopez reports.
Historically, the majority of poll workers in Austin have been older. Because of the COVID-19 pandemic, though, many of those former poll workers aren't going to risk their health by working this year. So Daniel Ressler with the League of Women Voters says Travis County officials need help bringing in roughly 700 workers, primarily younger people. Ressler says that's why he and others have developed a simple online form that goes straight to Travis County officials.
It's a very, very streamlined process that somebody can basically just do on their phone.
For the July 14th primary runoff, Travis County will have 20 early voting locations that will need to be staffed and 100 election day locations. As of late last week, Travis County officials said more than 90% of early voting locations had been staffed and about roughly half of election day locations were staffed. Early voting begins June 29th. Ashley Lopez, KUT News.
Austin Police Chief Brian Manley will stay in his position, according to City Manager Spencer Kronk. Local activists have been demanding that Manley be fired, and five city council members have publicly called for new leadership at the police department. This happened after police officers seriously injured last month at least two people during protests against police violence. But City Manager Kronk says he had very pointed conversations with Chief Manley over the last several weeks, and Manley is, quote, sincerely committed to making the reforms necessary, end quote. That's from Kronk. So under state law, Manley cannot be fired. He can only be demoted to the position he held before police chief. And the only person who has the power to do that is Kronk. Giant yellow letters spelling Black Artists Matter now cover a one-block stretch of 11th Street in the heart of Austin's African-American Cultural Heritage District. A team of local artists and activists painted the mural this week. The city of Austin provided some financial and logistical support. The same organizers were behind a mural painted earlier this week on Congress Avenue, spelling the words Black Austin Matters. Talib Abdullahi took a break from work to watch the mural being painted. He's a Black Austinite. He said the city has not done enough to preserve neighborhoods or at least stall gentrification that has priced out Black neighbors. And he said the mural is a step toward a more tangible acknowledgement of the city's role in gentrification. But he said it's a single step in a single moment.
It is an interesting move, but at the same time, I welcome it because I think the larger context is that the city is moving to try to do the right thing. And I mean, I think figuring out what the right thing to do obviously is going to take a long time.
Of course, today is Juneteenth, the date that enslaved Texans found out they were free. And we're going to have more about that in a moment. But first, let's talk about The Eyes of Texas, the school song of the University of Texas at Austin. It is under some scrutiny over its past. And as KUT's Jimmy Moss reports, it's a look that is long overdue.
At first blush, you might think this whole controversy began earlier this month when Texas football coach Tom Herman encouraged players to speak out in the aftermath of the police killings of George Floyd and others.
Now, more than any time in our society, I think is a great opportunity for the young people in our society to express themselves and not just express themselves for the sake of expressing themselves, but express themselves and take action that leads to positive change.
That is a big change in direction for most institutions. Often the messaging from student athletes is controlled with much power in the hands of the university athletic departments. Empowering student athletes to have a public say in what goes on around them is, well, different. Caden Stearns is a junior defensive back for the Longhorns.
I've been blessed to given this platform and play at a university that has a huge platform. And to not use it to help society out and help my community, then that will be a failure to me personally, because it's bigger than football.
And as for the folks who say, shut up and play.
We're more than just people out there just banging our heads and hitting people. We got people who got beliefs and perspectives too. And so as athletes, I think we should use that to the fullest ability.
Last week, football players listed on social media changes they'd like to see, posted under the school slogan, "What starts here changes the world." There are physical changes they'd like to see, like changing names on buildings that were named for slaveholders or known segregationists. They want more diversity in statues and campus sculptures and more diverse artists commissioned to create them. They want the athletic department to donate 0.5% from football earnings to Black organizations like Black Lives Matter. But at the end of the list was a change that is a little more emotional for UT fans and alumni. Athletes asked for the replacement of the Eyes of Texas. And if the song is not removed, they want the requirement that all players stand and sing it eliminated. This part left many people wondering, what could be controversial about the Eyes of Texas? And the answer goes back 120 years. The phrase, the Eyes of Texas, comes from former school president William Prather. He liked the way Confederate General Robert E. Lee would end his speeches with, "The eyes of the South are upon you," and began inserting Texas in the middle of that phrase. A student organization called the Texas Cowboys would put on minstrel shows in blackface, singing parodies of Prather's speeches to the tune of a popular folk song back then, "I've Been Working on the Railroad." That is how the school song was born. That origin story is not taught at new student orientation.
I see the song as that, something that people do without necessarily thinking.
Edmund T. Gordon is Associate Professor of African and African Diaspora Studies at the University of Texas. He put together the school's racial geography tour, a closer look at the architecture and how placement of buildings and statues were influenced by race and gender.
Now, that also means that I see us at the University of Texas and in society in general engaged in a whole bunch of behaviors that come from a past that we're not linking those behaviors to.
Gordon says whether people knew its origins or not, its roots are undeniable.
It also has other kinds of important meanings to people. And I don't think it can be reduced to any one thing, but it does have racial undertones.
You peel back further, and those tones start to make a chord. The melody Eyes was written to, I've Been Working on the Railroad, is seen today mostly as a folk song for kids. That's not where it started. It was cribbed from Franz von Suppe's Poet and Peasant. Words were written to that melody and gained popularity in minstrel shows in the late 1800s and early 1900s. I've Been Working on the Railroad has seen many rewrites through the years, but the original lyrics, published in the 1890s, most often performed by white men in blackface, would shock most parents today who've included the Raffi version on their kids' playlist.
I couldn't even begin to fathom how many times I've played that song or have conducted that song. It's definitely in the thousands, you know.
This is former University of Texas student John Fleming. He studied music and in 1990 became the first African-American to lead the Longhorn Band as drum major. He did so for 2 years. He has since been active in the alumni band, so he knows the song, The Eyes of Texas, present and past. He says school songs are tricky.
Putting the whole racist beginnings aside for a minute. To me, a school song is very much like a organization's mission statement. And the song, I think, musically, the way that it's been arranged and the way that it's been performed carries a lot of weight.
He sees the conflict. Is that musical weight, the sense memories and meanings associated with it today, enough to counter the pull of its origins? A question he's been wrestling with since taking the field with the band at Texas.
I'm a black man standing in a white uniform leading all of these people in a song that I'm not sure that I'm pretty sure I'm not happy with, knowing what I know about it, and no one's talking about it.
It appears now they are. The social posts by the Texas athletes have spurred a number of conversations online. More importantly, UT's interim president Jay Hartzell said Monday that he is scheduling conversations with students, including leaders of black student organizations and student athletes, as well as other community members, to hear their concerns and ideas directly. The athletes say that they will not participate in recruiting players or helping with fundraisers until the university and athletic department make the campus more comfortable and inclusive for its black community. I'm Jimmy Moss in Austin.
So as I mentioned, today is Juneteenth, but there are celebrations throughout the weekend. It's being marked across the country, the date that slaves in Texas found out they were free. The only black member of the Austin City Council, Natasha Harper Madison, announced this week that she plans to bring forward action to designate Juneteenth as an official City of Austin holiday. As Alejandra Martinez reports, a 93-year-old activist and lifelong Texan has been campaigning for years to make June 19th, Juneteenth, a national holiday.
Inside a red brick historic Fort Worth house, 93-year-old Opal Lee, her granddaughter, and a couple volunteers are hard at work.
Hi, this is Dion.
Hi, Dion. It's Shaquille with Trinity Metro again.
Yes, ma'am. All righty.
they're busy planning this year's socially distanced Juneteenth celebration.
And if you can imagine the visual of Miss Opal walking and this string of cars, as far as the eye can see, behind her going straight up Lancaster, it is just a total awesome vision.
That's Dionne Sims. She's talking about her grandmother. For over 40 years, Opal Lee has led the Juneteenth celebrations in Fort Worth. This year, she'll be walking 2.5 miles. That's because it took 2.5 years after the Emancipation Proclamation was signed for enslaved people in Texas to be freed. Lee says this year's Juneteenth feels different.
I just cannot understand in 2020 why we're still going through the same things that people went through in slavery time.
Lee's talking about the killing of George Floyd, police brutality, and racism. She's been watching the nationwide protest.
I feel like maybe whites are afraid, and we're not a people that you need to be afraid of. We're the people who are doing your cooking and your cleaning and looking after your children. What's to be afraid of? Why the animosity? I can't fathom it.
Juneteenth is supposed to be a day of celebration. It commemorates freedom and achievement. Lee's granddaughter, Dionne Sims, says even today, blacks are not truly free.
And now when you get all the way to 2020 and you're still celebrating freedom and you have things like George Floyd happening, and you go, well, if I've got freedom from slavery to 1968 when we got our right to vote, it's like, well, what are we needing to still be free of now? You would think it'd be okay. And it's not. So right now, we're needing freedom from fear.
Planning for this year's Juneteenth has taken so many turns. First, coronavirus. Then, the surge of Black Lives Matter protests across the country. Opal Lee is staying hopeful.
And we think Juneteenth is a catalyst. We think it's a unifier.
She's been advocating to make Juneteenth a national holiday for the past 4 years, and she's determined to make it happen.
When we get 1 million signatures and Congress realizes it's just not a little old lady in tennis shoes, that they're going to take notice and do something.
Until that day arrives, Lee will keep on walking and fighting. I'm Alejandra Martinez in Fort Worth.
That's KUT Weekend for the third weekend of June 2020. You can subscribe to this podcast at weekend.kut.org and email any questions or comments to weekend@kut.org or just ask me on Twitter. I'm @KUTNathan. Our theme music is by RAC. Thank you for listening. I'm Nathan Bernier with KUT 90.5 and KUT.org. ¶¶